Good afternoon. Welcome to our KSB Live update for April 23rd. You should have a link to our usual outline, and it has a very limited list of legislative committee meetings because there aren't very many as we prepare for the veto session that will start this Thursday. The new face today, we are joined by Chris Courtwright. He's been on our program before. He's going to walk us through the big news Friday. In addition to gun protests and cannabis celebration, Friday was also the release of the April consensus revenue estimate. So Chris has been kind enough to come in and as the chief economist for the Kansas Legislative Research Department will walk us through the economics underlying and the actual results of what we expect for our state tax collection. So Chris, thank you for joining us. We'll remind everyone as usual, if you want to try to get questions to us, either by entering them on our YouTube live stream or emailing me or Scott or Rob Gilligan, texting, whatever you can do, we'll try to get a response to Chris. So, Chris, why don't we just start by telling us, remind our members, if they don't know for the first time, so what is the consensus revenue process? Who's involved? What do you do?
Well, thanks for having me, Mark. As you mentioned, we have a consensus revenue estimating process in Kansas. And I guess if you look up the word consensus in the dictionary, you'll see it says something like unanimity of opinion, right? Why is it important we all have this unanimity of opinion in Kansas? And I guess the answer is because we're not the federal government and we don't want to do things the way they do it. It's always been a mystery to me how people in Washington, D.C. can make public policy when you've got the White House with one set of numbers and budget assumptions, right, and the Congressional Budget Office with another, and the House Republican Caucus with another, and some partisan interest group with another. It has to be just terrifying to try and figure out the right approaches to take. And I guess if you're a member of the U.S. Congress, at least you've probably got 20 different interns and gophers on your staff who can help you sort through and figure everything out. But the idea in a small state like Kansas with a part-time citizen legislature that's only here 4 or 5 months a year, the notion is, look, let's everybody agree at the outset that 1 cent of sales tax is worth X and 5 cents of cigarette tax is worth Y, and then the policymakers can choose up sides and start fighting about whether to raise or lower the sales or cigarette tax. But for crying out loud, let's not have everybody cooking the numbers going into the debate. This is why governors are required by law to base his or her budget recommendations on basically what we do as the consensus group.
And that, I guess, the other difference between the state and the federal government is they can run a deficit and we can't.
We cannot. That's
so
correct.
To some extent, they can sort of decide how much they want to spend. And it usually is more than is coming in recently. That doesn't really matter. But in Kansas, if the revenue estimates are wrong on the wrong way, we can be in a situation where you're looking at budget cuts, rescissions, as many of our school leaders have lived through.
That has happened a number of times in recent years, in fact.
But it doesn't look like it's happening now. So why don't you kind of tell us a little bit, well, maybe before we get into the actual results, I'm assuming that part of what drives the consensus is your understanding of what's happening in the Kansas economy. So kind of tell us where we are right now.
Absolutely. What the consensus group does, we have consulting economists from some of the universities. We have industry sources. We have a lot of people who spend a lot of time helping us get an overview as for what's going on with respect to the Kansas economy, the regional economy, and the national economy. And the important part is, how have those expectations changed since April? There's two major meetings of the consensus group. There's the economic outlook meeting that's held a few days before sort of the main meeting. And as you noted, the main meeting was Friday. So we visit about what's going on with growth and some of the key metrics in the Kansas economy. As I said, how things have changed with regard to those expectations since November. Then piece it all back together and try and apply that revised analysis to what's going on with the major tax sources, especially income and sales taxes and these kinds of things. Friday's meeting represented the first opportunity the full consensus group had to reconvene and revise the previous forecast, which had been made in early November for both fiscal 18 and 19. And fiscal 18, of course, is the fiscal year that ends here on June 30th, and then the first day of fiscal 19 is July 1st, and then it ends a year later as well. Quickly, let me just tell you what those results were. And as you know, as we discussed a minute ago, the direction of the results is different than what we'd seen for the better part of the last 4 years. The revisions were upward. Basically, the overall estimate for 18 and 19 combined was increased by a combined $533.8 million. Some $217.1 million for FY18, those estimates were increased. And for FY19, it was $316.7.
And that, I might just say, is kind of an important semantic to remember. We talk about that $500-some million. That is over 2 years. It's not necessarily stacked one on top of the other. It may end up that way because you're building in growth, but those specific numbers are looking at how much did we go up 1 year from what we thought we had in November to where we think we'll be now, and then the same for the second year.
Yes, and it's the sum of our changes in the estimate to every tax source. There's sales tax, there's income tax, there's cigarette, there's liquor taxes. We look at every tax source for both 18 and 19, piece the whole thing back together. And as I mentioned, I guess the good news is that in an FY19 ending balance sense, of course, the legislature is working on a budget for 18 and 19. In an FY19 ending balance sense, there's now $533.8 million of additional resources available by the last day of FY19 than what existed middle of last week, which when the November estimates were the baseline. At this point in time, you know, that could flow into ending balances. There's other ideas about what to do with that money. We can get into a little bit of that later. But for now, as I mentioned, the overall estimates are up and up significantly for both fiscal years. But to go over the revised economic outlook, before we get into the specifics of what happened with some of the individual source estimates, I'll tell you that the previous 3.1% growth figure that we've been using in November for calendar year 2018 Kansas personal income is now up to 3.9%. So some of our consulting economists got together and they said, okay, the total amount of personal income that Kansans have here in calendar 18, we had thought it was going to be 3.1%. Now they're a little bit more optimistic on that particular metric, so 3.9%. For calendar 19, the estimated growth was increased from 3.6 to 3.8%. The latest national estimates have U.S. personal income about 4.3%. Those are pretty well unchanged from the previous forecast.
So that just essentially means we appear to be doing better than we thought we were last fall, but still not quite as good as the nation overall.
Yes.
And that personal income growth is probably important because, well, income is what we tax income on to some extent, and that is what people have to spend on things, which is what we tax sales on. So that's obviously critical. There's another measure, though, that you guys look at, right, in terms of looking at the economy.
Yeah. Another one of the critical variables we look at is the overall health of the economy. How fast is the overall economy growing? Regardless of what we're taxing or what's not, let's look at measures of the overall growth in the economy. And at the national level, it's gross domestic product. At the state level, it's gross state product. And so some different estimates there. We have a recent index we've looked at that gets us a little bit more timely look at what's been going on than the data that come out of the federal government. It's the Emporia State Economic Index, and it suggests that from last February to this February, the Kansas economy had grown by about 2.06%. The current estimate for the entirety of calendar 18, we think real Kansas gross state product is going to grow by 2% now in calendar 18. We had been assuming 1.5% last November, so that one's ticked up a little bit.
So 2% doesn't sound like a lot, but that's 25% more, if I'm doing my math right, than 1.5%. So in terms of the impact, that's positive.
Absolutely. That's positive. The current comparable estimate for for U.S. real gross domestic product for 18 is 2.5%. So again, a little bit better news in Kansas, still not growing as fast as a nation as a whole, perhaps.
And am I right by saying, you know, I think I remember over the last few months and past year, President Trump and the tax cuts, the kind of that the goal nationally they keep talking about is 4% would be pretty remarkable growth. And so while this is showing at least nationally, we're expecting it to be a little bit better, but it's still not dramatic by, I guess, maybe where some people would like to be.
No, certainly nowhere near 4% growth is forecast, even under the most rosy, right, rosy scenarios. And beyond looking at some of these critical variables, what's going on with inflation and unemployment and gross state product and personal income, we look specifically at some of the key sectors, right, of the Kansas economy. And of course, when talking about the state's economy, we like to start with the agricultural sector. What we know is strength in the livestock industry since last fall was the major factor in boosting final calendar 2017 net farm income above its level it had been in 2016. But as a lot of folks in the ag sector know, crop prices have continued to struggle, even as above average yields have supported overall cash receipts. And it also looks like calendar 18 is now turning into a challenging year in both the crop and the livestock sectors. Ag lending has been increasing. And of course, that new added debt coupled with some increasing interest rates we've been seeing, that could signal added stress down the road for folks in the ag sector as it relates to repayment issues. Net farm income throughout the forecast period, again through the end of FY19, is expected to remain significantly below levels that we saw as recently as calendar 2014. And certainly the drought conditions that we've seen could cause a downside risk to some of the current projections we get from our friends at the Department of Agriculture. So some concerns with the ag sector, certainly. I also want to pause here and add that the potential of a developing trade war has not really been fully analyzed to this point, but that definitely could pose a significant downside risk to all these consensus numbers were it really to break out into a full-scale kind of trade war, because the economic impact on Kansas agriculture and manufacturing sectors and what would happen to Kansas exports and the subsequent ripple effects would cause, I think, some angst and some economic downturns throughout the state. It's not entirely clear what's going on there.
Right.
There's a notion once in a while that, well, cooler heads in Washington maybe are going to prevail. But on the other hand, some days we don't know exactly who the cooler heads in Washington are. So
And so that's probably a critical thing that is always the problem with forecasting. You know, you're making a projection kind of based on what we're seeing now, but we obviously don't know the unknowns. And so some of these things that are potential warning signals don't know what they're going to go, but I think one of the things you'll probably mention several times, there's still a lot of unknowns, still a lot of question marks. That could be one of them.
Absolutely. Listen, and if the Chinese really do slap us with 179.8% tariff on sorghum, well, you know, that could be a borderline catastrophe for folks in the Kansas economy. And we just don't know yet how some of these things are going to play themselves out. And so we monitor all this. We'll monitor all this over the summer, and then the full consensus group will reconvene again in November.
So we know ag has been kind of a problem for the last few years. The other thing people have talked about, energy, oil, and natural gas.
Well, and natural gas is another key component. Oil and natural gas prices generally have been declining in Kansas since fiscal 2014, which means, as we would expect, severance tax receipts have been going down, especially when you factor in some of the accelerating drops in production for both oil and gas, as well as some of the lower prices. prices. For example, oil production had been over 49 million barrels as recently as fiscal 2015. It's now expected to only be 30 million barrels by the end of our forecast period. Gas production was almost 300 million MCFs in fiscal 2015. It's going to be down to about 180 million now in fiscal 2019 as production, especially from the Hugoton field out in southwest Kansas, continues to decline. And if you want to tie some of these declines back into receipts, it's worth noting that state general fund severance tax receipts were close to $126 million in fiscal 2014, and now going to be right around $41 million in 18 and $36 million in 19.
So
those
just
have really gone down.
Exactly. Lost $100 million in potential revenue right there, basically.
Yeah, and as bad as some of this sounds, I will tell you that our current receipts outlook is nevertheless actually a little bit brighter than it had been in November, thanks largely to an increase in the estimated price of oil. The forecasted average price for Kansas taxable crude, we've been using $42 per barrel in November for FY18. We raised that to $49 per barrel. And for fiscal 2019, we raised the price from $41 to $52 per barrel. I will tell you, just to tie in with the point you made about the uncertainty a minute ago, we do these severance tax estimates in sort of a separate ancillary meeting a couple days before the main meeting. And so we did all this analysis and put all this stuff together. And then the morning after the severance tax meeting, just sort of randomly and from nowhere at 5 o'clock in the morning, Donald Trump tweeted out some kind of attack on OPEC. And as a result of that tweet, price of oil fell by $5 a barrel on global futures markets just overnight. I mean, it's bounced back now, but it just goes to show you know, things happen so fast anymore. 10 cents will get you a cup of coffee, you know, with respect to whether this is right or not.
And I think the other thing, it's one of those odd sort of situations that if you're, you know, at the pump, you're frustrated because gas prices are creeping up a little bit. Well, if there's a silver lining, that's maybe good news for our energy sector in Kansas and maybe good news for state general fund receipts a little bit. But so if you're looking for just a little bit of comfort while you're doing that. But as you say, it's so hard to know. And there is discussion of oil climbing, but we don't really know. Well, so let's tie this all together. Those are kind of two big factors we look at. What's the outlook now sort of for our overall unemployment, earnings, that kind of thing?
If you want to piece together what's going on in employment, there's, like some of these other things, there's some pluses and minuses since November. Basically, we sit down with folks from the Kansas Department of Labor, and they tell us that the overall employment outlook has remained relatively stagnant, frankly, since early 2015, and continues to lag behind national employment growth. February to February, which is the most recent data we have on the table in front of us, the state did have 500 more private non-farm jobs than a year earlier. Professional and business services and leisure and hospitality saw healthy increases, but construction and financial activity sectors saw the largest decreases.
And they pretty much canceled each other out.
Yes. Nominal hourly earnings in Kansas increased 2.4% over the same 12-month period, up 2.6% at the national level. The Kansas unemployment rate, though, is better than the nation as a whole. It had fallen to 3.4% in February. National rate had been 4.1%, and these do reflect increasingly tight labor markets. And basically, the state rate is supposed to remain at this relatively modest level, 3.4-3.5%, frankly, through the end of calendar 2020. So the insured unemployment rate is supposed to stay low in Kansas. I suppose some good news there.
So that, if I can summarize that, that basically means, well, we're not adding jobs, but people who want a job people who want jobs have them because unemployment is very low, and the earnings are running at least ahead of inflation, so that's very positive. Okay, how does this translate then into revenue for the state?
Okay. while there are positive and negatives that we've gone over with respect to changes in our economic outlook since November, when we turn to the revisions in the estimates for the different tax sources, we see that there's really, frankly, only one major headline coming out of Friday's meetings, and it relates to the increase in the estimate for the individual income tax in both fiscal years. So I think it's necessary to spend a few minutes going over some of the complicated issues associated with estimating receipts from this tax source, especially in the wake of new state and federal tax laws.
Yeah, and we do need to spend a moment because, again, for our viewers, and believe it or not, we do this as a podcast, so some people are listening and having to keep all of this in mind in their head. But what has been true for well over a year that you've been warning us about is there's been a lot happening on the income tax side. That makes forecasting really complicated. I think you're telling us it's not going to get any simpler to try to explain where we are, but go ahead and do your best.
No, that's right. I think the budget director at the press conference on Friday afternoon described what's going on with all these intersecting and overlapping complications from federal and state tax law. He described it as a perfect storm of uncertainty. And that phrase apparently intrigued the State House press corps because I saw that repeated in a couple of different accounts of that meeting. But he's certainly not wrong about that. There have been so many things going on. So let's spend a minute and walk through them. With respect to the Kansas income tax law, and you'll recall that the Kansas legislature in 2017 did enact Senate Bill 30, which was sort of an income tax reform and restructuring measure. And for several years, Kansas had dropped from a three-bracket system back to a two-bracket system and made a number of changes in our income tax law and also significantly had repealed the non-wage business income, the tax that had existed up through 2012 on non-wage business income. Some policy changes in 2013 and 2015, but by 2017, the legislature said, look, we think that we want to go back to a three-bracket system, and we think we need to repeal the exemption on non-wage business income, and in fact, they did that. That was part of Senate Bill 30, and when that was enacted, that was going to increase FY 18 receipts by some $591 million and FY19 receipts by some $633 million as part of this legislation last year. So besides monitoring that, which is people, you know, have just for the first time the last couple of months been filing their new tax year 17 returns based on this new law for the first time, there have been some other federal changes that have really helped shuffle the cards too. So trying to sort through all this, one thing we know is that as if there weren't enough imprecision in the revenue estimating process, when we're done with it, we take and disaggregate it into 12 separate monthly sub-estimates. Right. So we can track what's going on relative to our expectations during the 6 months in between the two times a year the consensus group actually gets together. And we know that the individual income taxes had been running almost $326 million ahead of the November estimate through the end of March. Now, there had, though, been some concern that certain payments may have been accelerated into late December or even early January in response to the new federal tax law that was signed on December 22nd. Of course, on November 2nd, when the consensus group met, it did not know that the federal government was going to change their tax law. But along comes Donald Trump and the United States Congress, and on December 22nd, there's a brand new federal tax law that's going to kick in 9 days, starting in tax year 2018. And one of the provisions of that new law is that effective for tax year 18 and going forward, there was significant surgery done on itemized deductions for federal income tax purposes, especially the one for state and local taxes paid. And that's now capped at $10,000 per year. It doesn't matter how much state and local taxes you pay, you can only write off $10,000 per year going forward. But what happened, accountants around Christmas quickly sent out sort of a red flag email to some of their heavy-hitting clients saying, ooh, wow, last train is leaving the station here in terms of maximizing your federal deduction for state and local taxes, because that provision is going to be capped here starting in the very near future. So I recommend that you make any and all state and local tax payments that you can possibly make here in the waning moments of tax year 2017. by quickly making a huge estimated payment here in advance of the January 15th date that you might otherwise make that federal payment.
And that just means that if people are rushing to do that, that is going to artificially inflate December tax collections, right?
That was the assumption. If people were paying us really, really early, all this money comes crashing in over the holidays, everyone writes us a big check on December 29th, that means that the anticipation was they're not going to be paying us as much when they finally settle their final liabilities in March or April, and or they might even get a bigger refund than they otherwise would have gotten. So we were thinking that there'd be some slippage showing up beginning in February and March and April as the tax year 17 returns were finally filed and reconciled. Right? If we were right about all this money that came crashing in over the holidays being part of the story here, but one of the issues that we talked a lot about the last week or two is when we actually got to the table the last couple weeks, there actually had not seemed to be much slippage thus far. And in fact, the Department of Revenue in the meantime through April 18th had in fact processed some 70,000 more returns than they had in the previous year. So it's like, well, where is this slippage? It hasn't quite shown up yet. As I mentioned, through the end of January, we had been up $256 million. But it's like, well, be a little bit careful here because some of this is going to slide away.
And you kept telling us all of this.
Yeah, oh, yes. But then we added another $13 million in February and another $57 million in March to be up fully $326 through, as I mentioned, through the end of March. So there's a lot of discussion about what's going on here. And in addition to there not being any apparent slippage, the other thing that we talked about, a lot of the underlying fundamentals for this very important tax source, especially withholding, estimated payments, and balance due remittances, the money people pay when they do owe money and they reconcile the returns, those monies that have been arriving with the tax returns, all those fundamentals appear to be very strong based on the data we've gotten from the Department of Revenue.
Right.
Revenue also told us that they've not yet been able to really do a deep dive or conduct a detailed analysis of the some 1.2 million returns that have been filed thus far. So there's nothing at this moment in time to sort of rebut the belief that many policymakers have had that the restoration of the tax to non-wage business income was in fact going to produce more money than had been assumed relative to the original fiscal note. Now, you may recall that of the $591 million of additional money that was going to be plugged into fiscal 18, some $270 million of it was assumed attributable to the restoration of the tax on non-wage business income. And during the years that exemption had been in place, there were some folks who I think thought that was why we were not meeting expectations. That was costing us more money than now that it's back on the books, it could well be one of the reasons why we're beating the estimate.
And not to just relitigate all of that, but as I recall, so much of that came back to the debate over whether that change, that totally exempting income, would or was actually creating more economic growth, or whether this is just kind of people changing income to avoid taxation. And so I don't know if we're prepared to comment on that, but it does seem striking that, as you say, many legislators, I guess, were of the camp that if we repeal that, we're going to bring in more because we're just going to be, you know, getting money that had been taxed anyway, that people had just shifted and recategorized to avoid the tax. Is that some of what's difficult?
That was certainly the debate. But again, in the absence of a deeper dive or more detailed analysis from the Department of Revenue, which we still hope is going to be available here over the summer, we don't, frankly, have many other explanations as to why we were up fully $326 million through the end of March, and in fact have been continuing to make decent progress as we track the daily receipts here, even on in through the first half of April. It's not like the last tax year ended with any kind of unexpected jump in personal income. And as I mentioned earlier, this slippage that we thought was going to start showing up in February and March didn't materialize. So if there's another candidate as to why we're up so much beyond non-wage business income. You know, I'm all ears, but that very well could be part of it. But again, we don't know and may not know till June 30th. But one of the challenges revenue estimators have is we have to take a shot so our policymaking friends can wrap up the session.
And so that's going to be, I think, some legislators may take the position that, okay, we're in the clear. The new revenue is fine. You know, let's do some good with it. Whether that is we can cut some more taxes, we can spend some more on state programs. Well, what is your? Let's go back to that storm of uncertainty. What's still out there that we need to worry about?
Well, there are plenty of returns out there that have not been processed yet, and there is ongoing uncertainty about receipts over the final 10 weeks of the fiscal year. June is an estimated payments month. There are some other things out there. So in a way, because of the lack of detailed information about the returns filed under the newly revised state income tax law, how the federal behavioral shift might have affected some of that, everything that's still out there. In a way, we're collectively hedging our bets a little bit by conceding that there is still the likelihood that at least some slippage still is going to materialize over the next several months. And the bottom line is we raised the individual income tax estimate by $218 million, even though we were up $326 through March. So in a way, there's...
So that's kind of an important point then. You did not bank the whole amount of money that you're running ahead. So this assumes at least the possibility, if not the likelihood, that some of that might still have been behavioral changes rather than actual economic changes.
Yes, is that fair to say? That is very fair to say. We just don't quite have our arms around it yet and won't. So FY18 up $218 million. For FY19, a couple quick points to make. We just raised the FY18 estimate, $218 million. We've now got higher personal income growth in calendar 18, which affects FY19 receipts. And so the FY19 estimate that we'd been using in November, actually the base estimate was raised about $230 million, or as you might expect, more than the $218, given the little bit higher economic growth. And then to that $230 million, there is another $84.2 million added, attributable to the new federal tax law and its impact on Kansas receipts, not related to this behavioral thing over the holidays we talked about, but federal government changed its tax laws in a lot of complicated ways, and our Department of Revenue had been asked to sit down with accountants and other people and try to determine, and this happened in all 50 states, really, what that would mean for state income tax collections. And
except for the six that don't have income tax.
Except for those that don't have income tax. But they did some work and got some federal Joint Committee on Taxation forecasts and tried to sort of extrapolate that down to Kansas and suggested that there'd be an additional $84.2 million in individual collections in Kansas for FY19. I should tell you, though, the Department of Revenue points out they have not yet developed the capacity sort of on their own ticket to forecast what the federal law really means using any other methodology other than this JCT stuff extrapolated down to Kansas. And so they caution everyone to take this particular piece of the forecast certainly with a grain of salt.
And is that $84 million, is that the windfall?
Yes, that's what some policymakers refer to as the windfall. You may recall a similar debate was held in the Kansas legislature about 30 years ago in response to the federal tax reform
was
act.
Was it really 30 years ago? Because I remember
you and I remember those days. Yes, it was the Federal Tax Reform Act of 1986. Similarly, even though it cut taxes at the federal level, it caused a boost in the state's coffers, and there was a debate in Kansas really throughout the late 80s into how do we return the windfall to taxpayers. And so there's folks wanting to have that discussion here as we speak, especially in relative to these new monies that are now on the table.
And in fact, I don't want to get too far away, but the last long day of the regular session, I believe our Kansas Senate passed a bill that was designed, I don't know whether you feel you can weigh, because there were a lot of many legislators voting against it said we don't even know what this will do, but the intent was to not capture that 84 million or whatever. Is that a fair way to say it?
Yes. The Senate did pass a bill that would represent a new round of state tax cuts, and there were parts of the bill that were hard to quantify, but the parts that we knew, it would have been actually 141 million in tax cuts. I believe it was the number for FY19, and that's passed the Senate and is now up to the House to decide what they would want to do with that measure. I suppose it could be deliberated in a conference committee. There are many, many pieces and moving parts to
that
bill.
Motion to concur.
Motion to concur could occur. So yes. With all this new money, tax cuts, new spending initiatives, any combination of those two things could well be on the table here when the full legislature reconvenes on Thursday.
Let's think the last thing you wanted to mention a little bit is part of the consensus process is not just the tax sources, but some other revenue, non-tax receipts to the state general fund. What's going on there?
Yeah. Taxes make up the lion's share of the general fund, but there's transfers in and out of the general fund, and there's agency earnings and interest. Those comprise sort of some of the non-tax sources. I guess one of the things to note there, estimated interest earnings to the state general fund have now been increased for both fiscal years since November as a result of higher than previously projected ending balances, of course, now that this new money is projected to come in, and also slightly higher interest rates than had been forecast last fall. So those two things combined, we're going to be more interest earnings on general fund idle balances over the next 15 months or so. And then I guess just bringing it all full circle, as revenue estimators, the consensus group worked with what we had at the table. We changed the estimates for both fiscal years as a result of what we were able to piece together regarding these income tax filing patterns and taxpayer behavior and this complicated intersection of these new federal and state income tax laws, as well as, of course, traditionally the changes in all these economic indicators and, of course, the fiscal year-to-date experience that we've seen through the middle of April. So That's our best stab at what all that means. And the other traditional caveat we give to people is ongoing uncertainty about the future of U.S. foreign policy, trade policy, health policy, tax policy, you name it, will continue to perhaps provide volatility in global and domestic markets. And the impact of any such volatility on confidence as well as consumption and investment decisions by consumers and businesses alike is something that the full consensus group will monitor over the summer and fall between now and our next full meeting here in November,
which we're already looking forward to. One thing caught my eye as I was going through the sheet, and again, we've given you in our outline links to the short memo is what this is called. For those of you that really get into us, a lot of what Chris has been talking about will be in the long memo. These are great names, whoever came up with them originally, because the long memo is usually about five times longer than the short memo. But it has all those economic assumptions in it for those of you that want them. But what really struck me is that when I look at the projected year-to-year growth from 18 to 19 in taxes, it looks to me like it's growing at about 3.5%. And while historically average, it's good compared to where we have been. But then I note that total receipts are projected to increase just 1%, largely because transfers into the general fund have been dropping from $382 million in 17 to $254 million in 18 and down to $85 million in 19. I'm assuming one of those was the Pool Money Investment Board borrowing. I don't know whether you know at all what some of those other pieces are, but I guess I just think it's important to realize that those are kind of one-time dollars, and so to some extent, those have helped kind of build up ending balances. And so another side of caution to look at for people is not only the uncertainty of the economic outlook, of course, could change for better or worse, but also people who are simply looking. The estimate only goes through 19. For those of us in school finance, we're talking about 4 years beyond that and whether we'll have money or not. the estimate only takes us to 19. So I don't know if you want to make any final comments about either some of those other revenue sources or just kind of that issue of looking at balances and some of those things.
No, I think that's all very fair, and in a way sets the table for whatever assumptions you want to make regarding the new school finance legislation and this notion of the some $522 million, if that's the right figure, of new money that's going to be phased in over the next 5 years. I don't have the specifics of what's in and out of the transfers. That's not my strong suit, but generally I will tell you that some of the things that have been done in recent years, because the state general fund was struggling so much, is there were some capers, payments into the state pension program that were not made at the previously proscribed levels.
Right.
Also, a certain percentage of sales tax receipts is earmarked for deposit in the state highway fund, but that hasn't been done for several years now. And instead, the money is retained by the general fund. So you're right. Even if the situation looks okay by the end of FY19, right now, when the 2019 legislature gets to town next January, and will for the first time be writing a budget for fiscal 20 and 21 under current law, the assumption is that, I believe in fiscal 2020, the legislature is supposed to start sort of truing up some of the money, the capers payments it didn't make for a couple years there. Also, there's folks who advocate for infrastructure and this kinds of thing that say, look, you need to start giving the highway fund the money it was supposed to get. So if you really do want to start breaking off more transfers for the comprehensive transportation program, getting back caught up actuarially to what had happened with the state pension payments. I know there's other folks out there, social services, regents, some budgets that were struggling during the previous 4 or 5 years want to say, hey, look, we need to restore some of these cuts. Whatever your assumptions are about 20 and 21 as to whether the new K through 12 money might mean ending balances are going to be lower or whether a new round of budget cuts and tax increases might be on the table, again, it depends on your perspective and what kind of assumptions you make about what you would have policymakers do in the future.
Right. And again, I'm certainly not arguing against increased school funding, but I guess I just note, just kind of looking, and we're not going to go into it now, but kind of looking at some of the budget projections, you know, the good news is it would appear that ending balances in 19, just the ending balance should be able to cover that phase in of 500 some billion more dollars. But the problem is, if you're just spending down a balance, and just quickly looking at the sheet, that would just basically, much of that would be funded by simply eliminating an ending balance. And so unless general fund growth is growing enough between 19 and 20 and beyond to deal with all these other issues, you could be right back in that. So that's why, although this is unquestionably good news, it's not going to end the debate over what we can afford and what can go to programs and what should be returned to the taxpayers and all of those issues, I think.
Absolutely,
so.
That's correct.
Okay, well, Chris, anything else you want to share with us before we let you go?
No, that's about it. Again, the debate on the both the budget and the tax fronts will be kicking off on Thursday when the full legislature reconvenes, and they're scheduled to wrap things up by May 4th. So it'll be a quick moving 8 days, I think, when they're in town, and we'll know what policy decisions they ultimately end up making here heading into the summer.
Very good. Well, we now we're going to just take a short break so we can excuse Chris and then bring in Scott Rothschild and G.A. Bowie to talk a little bit about what we can expect in the session that begins later this week. Chris, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. We'll have you back in November, if not before.